church family. Didn't hear anything. Good morning, church. Oh, that's better. Okay, now I know you're there. Are you distracted? What are you thinking about right now? Christmas? Huh? That special gift that you're going to buy for your spouse or your friend or your grandchild? Well, I can think of a lot of things that I would like to buy for my new grandson. Thank you so much for allowing us last week to come and share a very special time dedicating my little grandson, Sean. And thank you for being so kind and gracious to my extended family. It's not very often I can get them all in one place at one time. That's one of the problems with growing up in a preacher's family, is that you don't often get everyone in the same place, especially when you're a pastor yourself, and then your brother's a pastor, and your uncles are all pastors, and they're all ministering on Saturdays in some congregation somewhere. So it's very hard to get everybody together. I was just glad that I was able to get my family here last Sabbath and was blessed. As you know, we are studying the life of Jacob, and in Genesis, the book of Genesis, the story of Jacob's family is actually takes up a number of chapters. There's a lot dedicated to the life of Jacob, and I've often wondered why is there so much said about Jacob? You know, why wasn't there more said, let's say, of Isaac, or even of Abraham? Well, I'll tell you. We've talked about the family system theory. They've also proven that usually by the third or the fourth generation, the dysfunction or the unhealthiness in the family becomes so painful and so difficult to work with that there needs to be a change, a transition, if you please. And as we study the life of Jacob, we will discover that Jacob becomes that transitional person. It's never easy to be a transitional person. It's never easy to be a person that stands up to the status quo and says, we are going to change. This is not going to continue. This suffering, this pain, this dysfunction, this unhealthiness is going to end now. And the next generation, hopefully, will be healthier. We left Jacob last week pretty smug and pretty happy, really. He didn't get the woman that he wanted the first time around, but he did the second time. Because you remember, his father-in-law deceived him. Imagine being deceived by your future father-in-law, being tricked into marrying, well, the one that you thought you were going to marry, you actually married her older sister, Leah. Imagine how disappointed Jacob must have been. But I think down deep inside, he probably figured, well, I kind of deserved this. Because, you know, after all, I've been a deceiver myself. But we left Jacob happily married. And I wish that we could say that, you know, the old adage, and they were happy ever after. I wish we could say that about Jacob and his family and his marriage. But unfortunately, Moses decided to include a few more chapters in the life of Jacob. And in the past, as I've preached through these various books of the Bible and various stories of the patriarchs and the saints in their lives recorded in the Bible, I've kind of glossed over at times. I've kind of just sort of passed over some of these things, and I haven't dealt deep into the background and the patterns and the family of Jacob. This time, though, I have been kind of intrigued and actually drawn to dig deep into the roots around the family, to try to understand some of the dynamics, some of the unhealthiness and the healthiness that we see in the life of Jacob's family. I'm sure that Jacob must have thought that his mom's plan had worked. You know, remember his mom said, well, listen now, Jacob, your brother's angry at you. Esau's angry, and he's breathing fire, and he's probably gonna kill you. So you need to go move away and go back to my father's house and find a wife there. And of course, you know, lo and behold, the minute he got there, he found a wife, or at least he found a woman that he wanted to marry. He had to work 7 years to get her. And then, of course, as I said before, he was cheated, deceived by his father-in-law, and he ended up marrying her sister. But then he agreed to work 7 more years so that he could have Rachel. And so they began their life together. They began their family life. But the more you read this passage between Genesis 29 and Genesis 31, it reads more really like a soap opera than anything else. In fact, the last part of chapter 29, I left out from last week because I wanted to begin there this morning. The last part, beginning with Genesis chapter 29, verse 31, is sort of the everyday life of Jacob after his marriage. And as I said before, it reads a lot like a soap opera. You could probably call it All My Children, beginning there in chapter 29, because that's what Jacob begins to have children. Or I would prefer to call it As Your Stomach Turns. But there's a whole lot of sleeping around. Leah has 4 boys immediately, right away. Okay? And the names you're going to remember, they're names that you will hear over and over and over again throughout the Old Testament. The first son's name was Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. Those are the first 4. Reuben, Simeon, Levi, and Judah. And I'm not sure exactly how in the sequence or how quickly these children came, but it seems to me they were pretty fast. 1, 2, 3, 4. 4 boys. Keep in mind that the Bible doesn't often record the birth of females. So we at least know that there were 4 boys that were born to Leah. Now, you can imagine that there was trouble. Why? Well, because the wife that Joseph really loved was Rachel. Rachel was the one that he had hoped he would marry the first time through. And Rachel's not having any children. What do you suppose pops up? Jealousy. Mm-hmm. Jealousy raises its ugly head. And in chapter 30, verse 12, chapter 30, beginning with verse 12. And we see, verses 1 and 2, I read it as 12 in my notes. When Rachel saw that she was not bearing Jacob any children, she became what? Jealous of her sister. And so she said to Jacob, and here are the quotes, "Give me children. Give me children, or I will die." Give me children. We have here a perfect picture of jealousy. She doesn't go to God and say, "God, please give me children." She goes to Jacob and says, "You better give me some children. You better make sure that I have children, Jacob. I don't have any. Leah has 4 already. You have to make me happy, Jacob. Give me what I want." I want you to listen to that carefully and think about that. So often I find in relationships this theme: I'm unhappy, and you have to make me happy. It's your job to make sure that I'm happy. It's your job to meet my needs. There's a big hole in my soul. My life is all messed up. So you, dear husband, need to make sure that I'm happy. I'm unhappy, and it's your job to keep me happy. And if you don't, I'll punish you. In her case, it was, well, if you don't make me happy, I'll die. I'll just die. Today, unfortunately, it seems that if people aren't happy with each other and they're not satisfying each other and they're not filling the holes in the soul, they go to find somebody else that makes them happy. That's the trend. That's the trend today. If my husband doesn't make me happy, I'll go find a man that does. Or if my wife, she's not meeting my needs, then I'll go find another spouse. I'd like to have just stop for a moment and pause for a moment here and remind all of us of a lesson that's very important, whether it's a marriage or a relationship. Your spouse or your friend is not there to fill the need and the hole in your life. That's abusive. The spouse or your friend there is there to support you, to encourage you, to pray for you, but not to fill a need that you have. And that's another lesson that we can learn from this experience or this part here of Rachel's request to Jacob. If you're suffering from something that is crippling your life, if something in your life, whether it's a past experience or a present experience, has left a huge vacancy, a huge hole in your soul, in your life, there's really only one person that can fill that. Only one person. That's God. I've discovered in over years of counseling marriages that so often people try to drain each other of emotions, to drain each other so that they can fill a need in their own life. Trying and hoping desperately that in some way they will find healing in their life. And after a few years, they realize that the person they've married can't fill that need. I'd like to suggest that if there's a big hole in your soul, if there's a great need in your life, whether you're single or whether you're married or whether you're in a relationship, you need to first of all go to God for healing. Find wholeness in God. Because if you try to find that, fill that hole with it by any other means, you will find that you will always come up wanting. We do it all the time. That's why we get into addictions, folks. We get addicted. We get addicted to drugs. We get addicted to money. We get addicted to things. We get addicted to relationships. I guarantee you that every situation I've had to deal with as a pastor and as a counselor, every situation when I find someone who is on a third relationship, a third marriage, or a third relationship, I can just about guarantee you that it's because that person has never sought to find healing from the problem in their own soul before they moved on to another relationship. And I can assure you that the place to find that healing is to turn to God and ask God to bring healing. And to find someone that can help you work through that. Your spouse is not there as your counselor or your psychologist. That's not a good place to put a spouse. It's not a healthy place to put a spouse. If you need counseling, you go to a counselor. But most importantly, God needs to bring healing into your life. So we have here this story. Rachel is expecting Jacob to fix it for her. It's your responsibility, Jacob. You have got to make me happy. I'm an unhappy lady. I am not happy with the way my life is going. And so you have got to make sure that I get what I need. You've got to fill that hole, that need that I have. And what is Jacob's response? My God? Excuse me? I'm not the one that's responsible here. And oh no, now we come. I hear an echo coming. And Jacob, verse 2, it says, Jacob became angry with her and said, Am I in the place of God? Who has kept you from having children? And then she said, here is Bilhah, my maidservant. Sleep with her so that I might have children. Uh-oh. Have we heard this before? How far back? How many generations back have we heard this very same story? These very words repeated over and over again. All the way back to grandfather Abraham. Remember the story of Abraham and Sarah. Oh, I'm not having any children. Well, here, why don't you take Hagar, my maidservant? You see? Isaac did the same thing. Father Isaac did the same thing. Here we have the third generation stepping aside, going around God's plan, and doing it their own way. Now, you would think that Jacob would have thought and said, well, okay, let's see now. My dad tried it, and it really caused trouble in the family. My grandfather tried it. It didn't work for him either. Maybe there's a lesson for me to have learned from my forefathers. Oh, no, he just charges right in. Guess what? How many kids does Bilhah have? Well, we have Dan. And we have Naphtali. And we have... Boy, there's a whole list of them there. Interesting. So Leah decides, since she's not having any kids, she's had a number of them, but somehow, for some reason, she's not having any children. She decides to try the same trick. So she goes to Jacob and she says, hey, listen, you know, for some reason I'm not having any more babies. Why don't you take Zilpah, my maidservant? And what does Jacob do? Oh, no, I've learned. I shouldn't do that. My forefathers taught. No, he jumps right into that one too. And he has how many kids by her? Well, there's Issachar, there's Zebulun, and there's a female, one of the few mentions of a female here, Dinah. Interesting. And finally, after them trying to do it their own way, trying to work things out, all the dysfunction and craziness, it's getting worse and worse. More and more children are coming, legitimate and illegitimate children. And finally, Rachel reaches out and prays. How do we know that? Because Rachel gave birth. Go back to verse 22 in chapter 30, verse 22. Then God remembered Rachel. He listened to her. There is evidence now. Rachel is finally talking to the right person. She's not going to her husband Jacob and saying, Jacob, give me a child. I need a child. I've got to have a child. She finally turns to God. And guess what happens when she turns to God? She has a child by the name of Joseph. Boy. Jacob's a pretty busy guy, isn't he? Kids and kids and more kids. He's repeating mistakes of his father and his grandfather. And so besides the obvious that we read here in chapter last part of chapter 29 and the first part of chapter 30, he's having children. Life is going on as usual. But Jacob's up to something else too. He's been pretty busy at home, but he's been equally busy at the office. Genesis chapter 30, verse 27. We're going to jump ahead here. Laban, his father-in-law, came to him and said, listen. Well, actually, Jacob asks if he can leave. He says, give me my wives and children, for I have served you and I will be on my way. But Laban doesn't want Jacob to leave. He doesn't want him to go. And there's a reason why he doesn't want him to go. It's obvious right here in chapter 30, verse 27. But Laban said to him, if I have found favor in your eyes, please stay. Please stay. I have learned by divination that the Lord has blessed me because of you. Isn't that interesting? Laban learns an important lesson. The very lesson that Jacob needed to learn. And that was that God was blessing. It's obvious. Laban sees that it's God that's blessing. It's God that's blessing Jacob. And he says, listen, Jacob, stay a little longer. And so Jacob comes up with a plan. Okay, fine. I'll make a deal with you. Jacob's still making deals, isn't he? I'll make a deal with you. I'll take all the speckled and spotted sheep and goats in your flocks as payment for the years of service. And you can have all the plain-colored ones. We'll separate our flocks. Now, it was obvious that God had blessed Jacob. It was pretty obvious to Laban. Because in chapter 31, guess what happens? The sons of Laban. This is the very first evidence that Laban had sons. Now remember when we were talking about Rachel out herding sheep? What was Rachel doing out herding sheep when Laban had sons? Here's this young girl out in the wilds of the countryside herding sheep when he had sons at home. And these sons are upset. They're upset because Jacob's flocks are large and he's becoming wealthy, and they're grumbling and they're complaining to their father. Jacob has taken everything our father owned and has gained all this wealth from what belonged to our father. We have jealousy here coming up again. But there's something interesting in the verses between verse 27 and chapter 31, the last part of chapter 30. Jacob goes about increasing his flocks. Does he do this by worshiping God and being faithful to God? It's obvious to Laban that God's been blessing Jacob. No, he does it by some weird... I tried to find some evidence that this would even work. He takes pieces of wood and branches, and he strips some of the bark off so that these pieces of wood or these branches had black and white streaks or brown and white streaks in them. And he placed them in front of the flocks when they were breeding. He placed it in front of the ewes and the female goats, so that when the males would come, they would see this striped wood. And I think he was hoping that somehow this would... I don't even know what he was thinking about, quite frankly. I don't know if there's any evidence that putting striped wood in front of, you know, animals that are mating would cause them to have children that had stripes and spots, or have baby goats that had stripes and spots. It's a lot of hocus pocus as far as I'm concerned. But this is where his mind is, folks. This is where Jacob's mind is. Rather than relying upon God to bless him and to give him, you know, large flocks of sheep and goats, he's out trying to do it himself, try to work it out himself. Now, if any of you happen to be goat herders or know any goat herders, if this actually works, let me know. I tried to look it up and try to figure it out, and I didn't see any evidence of how this would work. But it seems some hocus pocus is going on here, and he is trying to work out his own plan. But it's time for God to get serious and to deal with Jacob. Jacob is still trying to do things his own way. He's still trying to influence his future. He's still trying to sidestep God's plan and do it himself. And so our scripture today, Jacob goes, he calls his two wives, Rachel and Leah, to come out into the fields where he was herding the flocks. And he said to them, I see that your father's attitude toward me is not what it was before. Duh. You really think that Laban trusted him? Do you think they really had a trusting relationship? You know, when you deceive somebody else, chances are, even though you are the one that was doing the deceiving, you're probably never going to trust that person because you know they're probably going to get back at you. And so I imagine in the back of Laban's mind, he's going, yeah, you know what? I'm just waiting for the hammer to fall. I'm just waiting for Jacob to get back at me. And he notices, of course, that the flocks that Jacob has are getting much bigger. But here is Jacob. He knows that he's been doing something pretty shady. He knows that he's been trying to pull off a little trick here with his father-in-law. And so he decides it's time to leave. It's time to get out of there. And so he calls his two wives and he says, listen, you know, your father's attitude towards me has been changing. And so it's time for us to leave. You know that I've worked for your father with all my strength, yet your father has cheated me by changing my wages 10 times. Excuse me, who was doing the cheating here? Who was doing the deceiving here? They both were. But he's crying foul. Jacob's saying, your dad's doing all this stuff to me. And so he's using that as an excuse. And he says, so God has taken away your father's livestock and has given it to me. And then, if we just move on down to verse 17. Then Jacob put his children and his wives on camels, and he drove his livestock ahead of him, all with all the goods he had accumulated in Paddan Aram. He was going to return now to his father Isaac in the land of Canaan. Do you get the picture? A lot of deception, huh? A lot of cheating. A lot of trying, excuse the pun, pulling the wool over the eyes of his father-in-law and vice versa. Where's this all leading? What's going to happen next? Jacob is being led by God into an experience and into a circumstance where he will have to totally and completely, completely depend upon God to save him. Jacob is still trying to do it himself. He's still trying to save his own skin. He's still trying to weasel things out of people. He's still trying to cheat. He's still trying to deceive. He still has yet to learn to wholly and completely depend upon God. In the next couple chapters, as we go through this, the book of Genesis, we're going to discover how God takes Jacob in all of his deception and all of his cheating and all of his lying, and he takes that man to a crossroad in his life where he has to finally make a decision as to whether he's going to continue on in his own strength or is he going to completely, totally depend upon the Lord for his future. For me, it's encouraging as I study the lives of these great men and women of God. It's encouraging for me to realize that in spite of the dysfunction, in spite of the unhealthiness that many of these people exhibited in their lives, that God was always with them every step of the way. That God was always there, even when it didn't seem like God was there, He was always there. Now, come on, let's be honest, folks. You know, we can look at the people in the Old Testament and say, well, yeah, you know, those were, you know, people that lived thousands and thousands of years ago, and we've become more civilized in our culture today. We're nothing like those primitives living in caves and goatskin tents out there in the deserts. We're civilized people. We drive BMWs and we live in beautiful homes, you know, and we have all the wonderful things that make us comfortable in our lives. We don't ever do things like they did. We're better than they are. We've improved. The race has improved. It's gotten better over the years. Is it really? Has it really changed? Has it really gotten better? Remember I told you last week about this idea of, well, you know, how we talk about young people? Well, in my day, we never did things like that. We were so much better as teenagers. Well, I challenge you to talk to your grandfather and your great-grandfather and tell them, be truthful. Be honest. Tell us the truth. What really happened in your day? And you'll discover, really, that humanity, from day one, the human nature has been the same. God still appeals to us here living in the 21st century. God still appeals to us to learn to wholly and completely depend upon Him. And He may have to take us through experiences in our lives that are so unhealthy and so dysfunctional that suddenly we wake up one morning and we go, this is crazy. What am I doing here? As I read the story of Jacob here, I begin to realize that that's really what's happening in Jacob's life. He's taken about all the dysfunction that he can take. Now, granted, he's part of it. He's a cause of some of it. But he's realizing that if there's going to be a future for his 10 sons, and we don't know how many daughters, and there will be 12 eventually. Actually, the next chapter you'll discover that, well, we did read it. Joseph was born. He realizes that he has got to get away from the environment that is literally driving him and his family crazy. You ever been there? You ever done that? You ever been in that kind of an experience? Maybe you're in that experience right now. Maybe you are like Jacob. You're saying, I just can't take any more of this. I need a way out. I need to find healthiness. I need to find wholeness. I need to discover and rediscover a healthy relationship with God. And sometimes finding a healthy relationship means that we have to say goodbye to the old relationships. That wasn't easy for Jacob to say goodbye to his father-in-law, as much as they, you know, conflicted and fought with each other. He was taking the grandchildren away from Grandpa. I know how that feels now. That's not a cool thing. I almost kidnapped my grandson, this, you know, I confess. I wanted to kidnap him, you know. Missing him all week long. We keep putting the pictures back up on the computer and laughing and looking at him and calling him all the little cute names. We come up with weird names for babies, don't we? Like Bubbles. My little monkey. You know, why do we do those things? I guess it's just all part of raising children. But he already has about 3 or 4 nicknames, and I'm not sure which one's going to stick. I'm afraid that some of them really shouldn't stick, but some will stick. And isn't it wonderful, though? And here, Jacob is taking his wives and his children away from their grandfather. And boy, is he mad when he finds out. Laban is angry, and I can understand his anger. It was justifiable. He was deceived again by his son-in-law. His son-in-law's on the run. I want to challenge each of us as individuals and as family units and as a church family unit. If you look at our bulletin, you see it every week. Every meeting you come to, every church business meeting, every board meeting, every meeting that you come to, you will discover that God has set us on a journey here at Point Loma. He has set us on a path, a direction, and that direction is to become a healthy congregation. And that's a challenge. God has challenged us to become healthy individuals and in turn become healthy families, which leads to a healthy congregation. And when you decide to be transitional, when you decide to follow God, when you decide to be healthy, don't expect everyone to be happy. Because you'll discover that people are happy in their dysfunction. Did you know that? It's a proven fact. That children who are abused and beaten and tortured by their parents, if given the opportunity, most often will go back to the very parents that abused them. If given a choice between going and moving on to a healthy environment, to another home, they always, almost always, not always, but almost always, they will choose to go back to the dysfunction because they're familiar with it. And that's true with families of all kinds. We stick with what we're familiar with. We stick with what we're comfortable with. Even though it brings pain, we prefer to stick with it because the unknown is scary. You see? And Jacob has wrestled now for years, and he's afraid because there's an unknown out there. He doesn't know. It's better just to stay with Laban and just deal with the dysfunction. You know, he's learned how to cope with it. He's learned how to deceive Laban, and he's learned how to do all these things that Laban does. And so he's pretty comfortable in that dysfunction. But God is taking him out of that dysfunction because God has a better plan for Jacob. And I would challenge you, if you are in a situation, in a relationship, or if you're in a family, or if you're in a job, or if you're in a community, or wherever you are and there's dysfunction going on in your life, I challenge you to seek God's plan in your life because God has a better life for you. And it may be difficult, it may be hard to move to a healthier place, but believe me, that's where God wants us. And as we continue our journey here at Point Loma, as we continue to grow, as we continue to be nurtured by God's Holy Spirit, as we continue to mature in our experience here, but let us not forget the story of Jacob and how God has a plan. He has a plan for Jacob and the future family of Jacob. By the way, if you look at that, the list of names, one of them is the tribe or the son named Judah. What tribe did Jesus come from? The tribe of Judah. One of the sons of Jacob is the great, 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 I don't know how many times over, grandfather of Jesus himself. Thank God he never gave up on Jacob. Because it was through Jacob's family that we have a Savior. God's challenging us to be healthy. He's challenging us to connect with Him and become healthy individuals, healthy families, and a healthy church. God bless.